Welcome. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In the winter of 2012, four women in Saskatchewan, Jessica Gordon, Sylvia McAdam, Sheila McLean, and Nina Wilson, exchanged a series of emails about Omnibus Bill C-45, a wide-ranging federal budget bill in Canada that included provisions that they saw as a threat to First Nations sovereignty and weakening environmental protections. They decided they had to act. They organized a meeting of local activists and set up a Facebook page with the handle Idle No More, based on their conviction that the challenge posed by this piece of legislation required their community to start working. 17 months later, Idle No More is a global movement, having sparked dozens of protests in Canada and as far away as Australia and the Ukraine. It has more than 100,000 friends on Facebook and over 20,000 followers on Twitter. It's become a place of convergence for those defending Indigenous rights and opposing corporate resource extraction, including the Keystone Pipeline. Environmentalist Bill McKibben says of Idle No More that its strength is that its roots go back farther than history. More than any other people on this continent, they know what exploitation and colonization are all about, and so it's natural that at a moment of great need, they're leading the resistance to the most profound corporatization we've ever seen. Every week on our Agenda for a New Economy series on Your Call, we try to talk about the economy as it is and about the people who are taking action together to create a more sustainable future. And our guests on the program today are certainly among those people. Nina Wilson is one of the co-founders of Idle No More. Ryan Belrose is an organizer with Idle No More in Calgary. And also with us is Nina's son, Daniel Sangret, a youth representative for Idle No More. Nina, Ryan, Daniel, welcome to Your Call in the Bay Area.
Hi there.
Great to have you here. And I want to let folks know that if you have questions about the challenges facing First Nations people in Canada, about Idle No More's work for both sovereignty and sustainability, and about how they've used social media to communicate with each other and with activists around the world, the number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at our website, yourcallradio.org. So I wanted to start actually with that quote from Bill McKibben that I just read. Clearly, he's doing work parallel to yours. Great admirer of what Idle No More has been able to accomplish. But I just want to kind of get your response to what he had to say from a couple of angles. I mean, I think on one hand in the environmental community, there is some credence given to Indigenous knowledge, and yet it's still often white male leaders like Bill McKibben that get to put their stamp of approval on something, or you know, that often have a voice in the public debate. And then the other side of it is just kind of talking about the role of Indigenous knowledge and resistance in a broader environmental movement, just kind of what you thought about when this began in at the end of 2012 and kind of where you are about that now. Nina, maybe you want to start.
Well, to begin with, I want to say that I'm very proud and thankful to be on Ohlone territory up in this area, and I'm thankful for the traditional people of this land. I think back home and all around the world, actually, the lands have been stolen from the Indigenous people everywhere. And not only the land, but everything, from the children to the economic, I guess, right to sustain themselves, the resources, and people haven't had that opportunity to examine that. Even if it's going to hurt a bit, it has to be something that has to be dealt with, because when we talk about resistance and fighting all these colonial systems, we have to look at the origin of where it all began. And where it all began is with the almost decimation of a people that are still here and are still fighting and struggling to survive.
And when you think about someone like Bill McKibben, who's, you know, responding to your work and in solidarity with what you've done, and the role that basis for understanding that changes the frame of everything you talk about when it comes to the environment. But how do you see what trying to bridge that divide between the people who aren't living with that reality and people who, like you, live very powerfully with it?
I think there's a healing that takes place with that. And although at this time my people are very injured, very wounded from the onslaught of what's happened to us and what's still happening to us, There's an opportunity there for people who have been displaced, dysphoria, or how you say that, for way generations longer than we have, to try to heal some of those and to really look at history for what it really truly is. Because today we have people coming out of the school systems who have no clue that we even exist. And so that is a very unfortunate, it could be a tragedy if that carries on. And people have the opportunity today to shift that around. And I think with these different organizations that are fighting for preservation of the environment, we can do that. We can do that together, with a deep respect for each other and the work that we do, that's possible.
Ryan or Daniel, anything you'd want to add to that?
The one thing that I kind of wouldn't mind just bringing to everybody's attention is that the best thing about Idle No More, in my opinion, is that it was led by women, right? And Aboriginal and Indigenous women have always been the most marginalized and oppressed people. And so it really sends a strong message that, you know, things are going to change. Not that they're, you know, not that we're just working for change, but that they are changing. The fact that it was women that led the movement, it was women that started it. You know, and it's very important to make sure that women remain the face of the movement.
Well, Nina, let's go back to the beginning of this movement when people might have first started hearing about Idle No More. I know I heard about it on the CBC, the reporting about it, but I think many people may not know kind of how how it began and how quickly it emerged and really became a force that people were paying attention to outside of Canada, for that matter. So take us back to the very beginning.
Well, in the beginning, we were all concerned about the things directly impacting our circumstances and our people that, I guess, you know, our communities. My own perception was my territory where my mother was born. I saw a lot of devastation to the natural environment because of oil and gas. And I worried about that because it was not the same as it was when I was a child. So I wondered, you know, it changed so quickly in that time frame. How much more is it going? And what are we going to do about it? Our water is... It frightened me when I seen signs everywhere saying, do not drink the water, don't touch the water, you can't even boil it and drink it. So that really bothered me. And I always thought that there has to be a correlation between the social ills that are occurring in my community and these corporations, because things are not getting better, they're getting worse. So that was kind of how I began. And I know that the other ladies have their own versions, but I know Jessica and I worked really frontline, even in the cities, because we experienced the same thing we do on the reservation as we do in the city. People put a barrier between both, saying they're very different, but really when you look at it, they're not all that different.
Well, maybe we could talk about the specific C-45, this bill that the Harper government had put forward and that was on the table when you all first started your work and was approved soon after. Mm-hmm. So this is a big, basically a budget bill, right,
yep,
for the federal government in Canada. But it had some very specific things that concerned you, that those kind of signs you were seeing of change that this might accelerate if this went forward.
Yes. Well, Bill C-45, when I first laid eyes on it, it boggled me. It was 450 some pages. I couldn't understand the discourse at the time. I still struggle with some of the discourse, but the discourse was of domination, and it was of it had a lot of sneaky things slid into it. It fast tracked through Parliament because the Senate and all of the leadership in Canada are all progressive conservative, so they could get things through very quickly. So a bill usually takes close to a year to go through, and this took for like almost 4 to 5 months, just fast through. And we had several people combing through the bills because what I couldn't catch or what the other girls couldn't catch were some things that other people caught. And it was brought to the attention of one of the founders about what Bill C-45 could potentially do. And what it did was, in Canada, our treaty rights protect us in a way that, and other people, not just our Indigenous people, but protect everyone, because we have say in who comes into our territory and does what. And that's no longer. the Bill C-45 has undermined that, and now it's like a free-for-all. Anyone can basically come in and do what they need to do. Our leadership are forced into, you know, accepting deals that they're not quite, they don't quite understand or are not good for us. And also another part of the bill that was really devastating is the protection for water was decreased down to 1%. And everyone thinks Canada is this really healthy, clean and pristine place, and they really aren't getting the picture that mainstream media is not our friend and they're not telling the truth.
And so you saw this real decrease in, I mean, you saw just the this opening of the lands, and particularly
yes.
to corporate resource exploitation, which is part of Canada's history
yep.
and certainly to history
Absolutely.
In the United States as well. But you saw this really being a big opening to that happening.
Yes.
And so what did you do?
Well, we were worried because water doesn't care what color you are. It doesn't care what class you are. If you don't have it and it's not clean and healthy, you will die. So we worried about how we were going to get the messages out there, and we just quickly began to organize. I think the first rally was, and I've never done a rally before, the first rally was in a blizzard, but people showed up by the busload. And the first rally I did, there was only four people there.
You say, wait, is this a rally or is it just like a group of friends?
and I barely knew what I was talking about, but I felt, okay, I can't be scared of this. And I just push on until I could understand it, until I'm much more advanced than I was in the beginning. In the beginning, I didn't have really a clue what these bills were. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a professional that way. So it took me a little bit of time to really go through them. And so the first rally that I attended or organized, there was barely anyone there. But I went door to door in the grassroots. I guess you could call them the hood. I went through the grassroots areas and I talked to the people one-on-one about what this bill could do. And the people, once they understood that this bill could threaten their territory, it didn't matter what they were doing and how marginalized they were in the city, they were very upset about it. And they started to build that momentum by going out and talking to other people.
And so talking on your call today, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. With us is Nina Wilson. She's one of the founders of Idle No More, this movement that emerged right at the end of 2012 in Canada, but that has now had an impact well beyond the borders of that country. Also with us are two other folks involved in that movement who are here in the Bay Area talking to local indigenous and environmental activists, Ryan Belrose, who is an Idle No More organizer in Calgary, and Daniel Sangret, who is a youth representative for Idle No More and who is Nina Wilson's son. So maybe just because it did grow so quickly, so many people, like you say, you had this experience that once you kind of laid out, here's this threat to our national sovereignty that is, you know, that is being fast-tracked through the Canadian Parliament, that message, not only was it resounding with people on the doorstep, it went into social media and electronically out. And maybe I'll just ask Ryan, as somebody who was kind of in one of those early waves of people who got reached by that message, what made an impact for you and what did you see getting people going?
Well, the way it really affected me was when I was younger, my father was really involved in Native rights and the Indigenous struggles. I'm not sure how much you know about the Lubicon Cree in northern Alberta, but that's a little bit south of where I'm from. Basically, in 1978, most of those people had never even seen white people. And in 1979, oil development began. Now, in 1978, they harvested 219 moose. That means, that was the primary method of existence, was hunting. In 1979, after the oil began, they harvested 19. So, you know, growing up, I knew the reality of the situation, and my own community has been drastically affected by resource development. So when I saw these ladies, I mean, the best part was they were just normal ladies. You know, they weren't all a bunch of lawyers. They weren't these hardcore professional activists. They were just normal people. And they stepped up, and they actually kind of gave us a blueprint on how to organize these things, like how to get involved. The most important part was that they kind of gave us our voice back. And so you see this on social media, and I think this is really the biggest difference between, you know, the crisis that we're in now and then what happened to Native communities in the early 80s with all the resource development. Was back then, there was no social media. Now we have Twitter, Facebook, and it was amazing to see how quickly, when Nina posts, it's amazing to see how fast those posts get shared. And I mean, she's always clearly been a wise lady, but now her wisdom can actually be shared quickly and effectively. So social media really did make a difference.
And there were some tactics, some things that, that certain organizers in the movement said, here, let's try this. And I think specifically the doing these round dances in malls, right? Mm-hmm. Something that I think is one of these things you're like, oh, what a great idea. But until somebody did it, no one might see the power of that. Maybe mm-hmm. talk about how that started and what that meant to people.
Well, there was a young lady named Star Andreas, and she made the... I guess the request for our young men to go into the malls. And the young man was, his name is Biddy Kiwaitan. He's from my territory. And he was the first one to do one of the flash mobs. And it was so powerful because our people, like I said, they were scared. I've been involved in some where there were almost 1,000 people there. And it was just, the feeling was incredible. It's something I haven't experienced since. And it was like people were afraid, but they were still moving past that fear. We don't frequent the malls a lot anyways because it's a place we can't really shop in. We don't spend a lot of time there. The malls are built on land that were taken from our people, and there's history upon learning about how those malls were built, what was under there before. Some of these places here in this territory are built on, you know, the burials of the indigenous people here. So some of that was very critical to mention. And just the sheer numbers that showed up, I know a couple of managers of malls had gotten upset with me and were like, Nina, what are you doing? And you're you know, like you're stopping business. And I'm like, no. I said, look at how much business we bring to you. If we shopped here, can you imagine how much business you would have if we came here? Our people came and frequented here, so you should find a way to be attractive for us to come here, because we're not sometimes welcome in some of those places. So it gave them something to think about, and it happened so quickly they really couldn't do anything about it. The numbers were too big. The security were just sort of sitting back thinking, okay, there's really nothing we can do. It was harmless. We weren't hurting anyone. We had elders that were in present that were crying because they had never seen the liberation of the young people and for themselves in their whole generation.
Well, I want to bring Daniel into the conversation here. First, I'm going to invite folks to call in and join this conversation. We are talking to activists involved in the Idle No More movement, a First Nations indigenous... Well, it's really about the sovereignty and a sustainability movement that really has grown within Canada, but has had an impact beyond Canada. And these folks are in the Bay Area right now, drawing those connections between struggles in Canada and here, and trying to make alliances, and certainly invite your questions, your comments, your ideas about what you're hearing, and your questions about Idle No More and the work it's done. The number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or you can send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, Daniel, I wanted to ask you, I mean, this must have been, obviously, in your mother's life, this was life-changing, the emergence of this movement. What was that like for you, and how has it been for you to become more active through this?
When I first started, I was, like, shocked at how it just sparked so quickly. And the number one way I think it just sparked so quickly is because there's so many natives that are just always shunned and quiet all the time. They're never allowed to speak out. They're never allowed to stand up for what's theirs. There's a lot of discrimination in the schools, a lot of hate. So the first thing that comes up that's this big, they see other natives, they see their families, they see their own people getting up and standing up for their own rights, their own lands. And so they want to do the same. And it just sparked so fast. Everybody just got all, it was all, they were all in it all together in that, I don't know, sorry.
Yeah, no, but that's it. And so it was something that you saw young people, your friends, move by.
Yeah, and there was a lot of youth. And I was involved in a couple flash mobs or protests inside of Winnipeg and Prince Albert to Cheyenne River. And wherever my mom goes, I always like to follow her and watch her. And I learn from her. And when she goes somewhere, I'm always coming with her most of the time. But... yes, it's like a good experience. I would rather choose this life than being out there and doing what most of the teenagers are doing, you know. now the time, most of the time nowadays. So yeah, I really cherish the life that my mom brings to me and teaches me a lot of things, and I know that these will be carried on to my kids when I have children and my future.
So when you say this life, I mean, that's an engagement with these issues and really taking responsibility for doing the work around it.
Yeah.
But I know also that you talked about after this you'll be going doing some direct action training.
Yes.
Maybe I'd like to hear from all of you because over here, but you obviously talked about a couple of the tactics that were used early on in the movement. But now, there's been a variety. I mean, it's not something where it's like someone sends down a directive. Here's the tactic we're using this week, right? You do. It's really some of people carry things forward. So maybe you could talk a little bit about. I mean, there have been some direct action protests that have come out of this movement. What those have been and where the role of that is in what you're doing. I mean, Nina, if you want to start.
I think in the beginning we were a little reluctant to be involved with blockades simply because we didn't understand them. And over time we got to understand, well, very quickly actually, we had a crash course in that, and we realized there's people who have been doing them for decades and very successfully. And strategically, so we learned really quickly that this is one of the techniques that can be used, and not just for our own purposes, but for the greater cause, you know, to try to support each other that way, and to bring some endorsement to some areas where people were struggling with backlash against them for being involved. So alleviating some of that pressure on them and some of that, I guess, backlash by just simply saying, you know, we support this
all the way. So what's an example of some of the actions that were taken?
Well, there was one that in particular, it was in the States here where some of the young ones that were involved were being, I guess, punished by leadership. And leadership were kind of using the Idle No More name to say that you can't do this, you can't fight against us, you can't. So the young people were doing it anyway, and they were experiencing quite a hardship with that. So I just went there. I went to the blockade and I said, hey, I support what these young people are doing, and it's perfectly.
And what were they blockading? Just so people know, kind of, what are some of the targets of the?
They were blockading protests? Enbridge. Enbridge had pipelines across their territory without any easements, without any, payment. I mean, if you're going to utilize a people's land and poison them, then at least, you know, ask for their permission to do that. And it never was done. So they were blockading that, and they were successful in getting Enbridge out.
And that is Nina Wilson. She's one of the founding organizers of Idle No More. Also with us are Ryan Belrose, who's an organizer with Idle No More in Calgary, and Nina's son, Daniel Sangret, who's a youth representative for Idle No More. They are in the Bay Area making connection with local activists, drawing together this larger movement around both sovereignty and sustainability that Idle No More has really connected people around the globe about. We invite you to take part in the conversation, and I want to let you know they are going to be at the in Sonoma County this evening, and I'll have all the details on that after the break. You can also find them at yourcallradio.org. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We'll be right back.
This is your call on Local Public Radio. To join today's conversation, you can call 866-798-8255. That's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK. You can write, if you'd prefer, send us an email, comment, or question to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, in about a half an hour, from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Following that at noon today, John Perry and Ken Taylor and Philosophy Talk.
I I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. On tomorrow's show, we are going to be talking about gardening during a drought. If you do it yourself, if you want ideas about how to do that, welcome your questions and comments on that program today. However, here on the show, we are talking about sovereignty and sustainability with three activists from the Idle No More movement from Canada who are here in the Bay Area. Nina Wilson, one of the founders of this movement, Ryan Belrose, who's an organizer in Calgary, and Daniel Sangret, who's a youth representative for Idle No More. And I want to let folks know, I have the details on the event now, that's going to be happening in Santa Rosa, and that is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. You can meet Nina Wilson and also Jessica Gordon, I believe also from Idle No More, hopefully be in town at that point. Tomorrow in Santa Rosa, that's tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Arlene Francis Center, 99 6th Street in Santa Rosa. You can also find that information at yourcallradio.org. I just wanted to pick up because we were talking about, you were talking, Nina, about different responses from quote-unquote leaders of Idle No More, two different kinds of tactics being used. And I think that it's one of the things that a lot of people talked about during the Occupy movement, about, you know, who's in charge and what, you know, what tactics are acceptable or not acceptable or what works. And maybe you could just talk about what the nature of Idle No More is as a movement, or Ryan or Daniel, you're certainly welcome to jump in as well.
Okay. Nina, do you want to?
Sure. I think that the movement itself is going through stages like any other that came before it. And I'm an accidental, I guess I never meant to do this. It just had to happen because I cared about what was going on. And I think that's how a lot of people get involved. It directly impacts something in their life, so they get involved. So I think that the leadership it's spreading out like, well, grass, right? It's like grassroots. It's all over. It's wild. There's no real spokesperson or no real leader anywhere. We're all kind of leaders. And I think that's why it was so confusing for people. It was made them very uncomfortable because they didn't know who to target. As founders, we definitely have influence. And I definitely want to use my influence in the best way possible that I can for people who are experiencing what we're experiencing back home. So those correlations are made. But the leadership aspect of it, there are so many different leaders. And people know. I mean, in the beginning, different people tried to use it for their own gain. And it just didn't work. I mean, it got me worried. But I mean, eventually, it just those efforts just kind of were seen for what they were, and the people again took the strength back, and that's where the strength is with the people.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people don't really understand is that Native leadership, other than, you know, what we call Indian Act chiefs and councils, we don't have rulers per se, like you know, white colonialist society. They tend to have, like, their leaders don't really lead; they rule their people. And the Native tradition is more of a leader. You know, they protect the people, they teach the people. And like people like Nina and the other founders, we kind of look to them less like to lead, you know, like to make us, but more to give us, you know, inspiration and to tell us, you know, what they think is the way to go. And especially like in Calgary, especially, I know we have three kind of main groups of Idle No More, and they all do their own thing and they all do different types of activism. But at the end of the day, we still look to those ladies for their, you know, they do have a lot of influence.
Well, I want to bring in one of our callers who's called in at 866-798-8255. You're also welcome to join us. You can send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Joseph in San Francisco. Joseph, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good morning to all. I really identify with your movement. Back in 1997, the scholar and historian Ward Churchill came out with a very nice piece entitled A Little Matter of Genocide, Holocaust, and Denial in the Americas, 1492 to the present. In that book, he argues that treaties have been broken right and left with First Nations peoples in the Americas, and just the mining specifically of uranium on lands, on sacred lands, and the dumping of waste byproducts on sacred lands. Does your movement address that? Is that something that being put out there to the general public? And finally, do you identify with AIM? Is the AIM movement still in force? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We do have a heavy involvement with any protection of land, and we do know that the uranium issue back home is it's really bad. The storage, the waste, we've been fighting to keep it out of certain territories, and there has been success. I mean, we're affiliated with other groups. I won't take their thunder. They did incredible amounts of work. The future for a committee for future generations. They did some amazing work to get those uranium mining issues brought to the light, and we support them fully. So we do know that there's a lot of exploitation, and not just oil and gas. Uranium is another big one. What was the second part of the question?
I think that okay. Primarily addresses what you said. Senator Ryan, you have anything to add to what?
No, I think Nina pretty much hit it.
Maybe also try to make this very concrete for people. What are the developments that are happening in, around, across First Nations lands in Canada? I mean, we've heard about tar sands. We've heard about, there's some of these things that have come into the consciousness here in the U.S. But there's some of this stuff is, I mean, it's major and it's happening now, and people just may not be aware of what some of those things are. So,
there's across like Native lands in Canada, there's potash, there's fracking. In some parts of Saskatchewan, you can't drive a minute without coming across a big oil rig. Small oil rigs, there's always spills, they're always erupting up in flames, and there's hardly any wildlife anymore. I got stories where like I would go hunting, I would get something, get a kill from one part of like Saskatchewan or one part of somewhere, and it'd be perfectly fine, and then we'd get an animal that we would hunt from where around where they would do fracking or oil or potash or something like that, and it would be rotting alive. The animals, like the aquifers, are getting poisoned over there. Like, and we pick a lot of medicines as Native American people. We pick the medicines, and they sprout because of the aquifers and water that falls onto them, and that's what makes them grow. And if our water's poisoned from that, from all the oil and drilling and that's happening around in Native American communities. Too. I don't know if that made sense at all.
No. I'm just curious, any other kind of just big illustrations of the change that's happening and that has you been like, we can't wait to act here.
Yeah, there's, like where I'm from, in Paddle Prairie, it's in northern Alberta, so it's the end of the arboreal forest where it becomes the tundra. They've literally clear-cut land. Like, when you go up there, you think you're on the moon. There's no trees left. When I grew up, there was forest. There used to be protections in place for stuff like that, and one of the big things about Idle No More, like you spoke to earlier about Bill C-45, they removed those protections. But they didn't just remove the protections like the Navigable Waters Act. That's where they actually kind of destroyed the protections for the water. They also started with more omnibus bills now that are targeting our ability to keep our land. Mm-hmm. So what a lot of people don't really understand is they hear the words, well, now Native people are going to have the ability to sell their land. And they think, okay, well, that's good. You know, like now they're a step towards becoming full citizens because, I mean, we're treated very differently than white people, especially in Canada. We're governed by a separate act. So it's really tough to understand unless you actually know that when they say you have the ability to sell your land, they're not saying that, you know, Ryan can sell his land, Nina can sell her land. What they're saying is that the chiefs that supposedly look after our best interests can sell that land. And a lot of those chiefs don't really have our best interests at heart. So what they end up doing is, you know, they say that the chief's driveway is always paved. So that's what ends up happening is they sell land, they get money, and the average Native people probably within 100 years won't have anything.
And maybe, I mean, to help us understand just how this, so the, and we're talking also, I think, just in terms of leverage, who's bargaining, right? We're talking about perhaps you have these individual chiefs who are bargaining on behalf of a certain group of people in a certain place with a government or with a global energy company. Mm-hmm. This is a tough negotiation to do well, right?
Oh, absolutely. And we're not trained for it. I mean, like there's a reserve in Ontario where De Beers has a diamond mine, And De Beers takes out billions and billions of dollars from that mine. They, you know, you hear the word $1 million and you think, wow, they gave that reserve $1 million. You know, that sounds like a big number until you realize that not only did they build a road right through the middle of that reserve and there's a huge pit in the middle of it, you know, chased away wildlife, chased away the animals. And then, you know, we're not advocating that we want a bigger piece of the pie, but what we're saying is there has to be a more sustainable way to do things and without destroying our lands and waters.
I want to talk some about what that kind of sustainable alternative is. Obviously, there's a lot of just trying to stop what's clearly unsustainable, but how, and Nina, as someone who's, as one of those people who providing leadership and some of the vision for Idle No More, what do you put forward as the positive alternative that does provide opportunity for people in a sense that there could be a better future as well as not just a worse one?
Well, one of the things people are not aware of in Canada, we are wards of the government. We have no say in, I guess, how we are going to come away from that. We're really struggling with trying to get out from under that oppression. And we want to be a part of that whole process where usually everything is dictated to us or we're very dominated. And so what we want to do is provide alternatives for oil and gas, uranium. We want to do that, but we can't because of our being wards of the government. We've had leadership for decades trying to do green energy. I have cases of documents that talk about different leaders that tried so hard to get green and sustainable things going, but they just, everything snowballed into nothing again because of the way that we're seen as Indian Act wards of the government. So we want that to be taken away from us, but we want to be a part of that because that Indian Act still says something that, yeah, you do have rights.
Mm-hmm, right. So you don't want the C-45. That's a unilateral thing on the part of a government. You don't have a voice in.
No.
Yeah.
One of the biggest problems I think with C-45 is that we have, like, the government in Canada has what's called the duty to consult. Now, that's massive because what that means is that the government isn't supposed to. I should say that they're not supposed to push things through without talking to us first. They're supposed to consult us. So what Nina was saying, it's really important to understand that the Indian Act, it at the same time that it oppresses us, it's also really right now the only thing that protects some of our rights. We want to replace that act, but like Nina said, we have to be part of that. Like, we have to be involved in doing that. Otherwise, it's just going to turn out to be something else that oppresses us in a different way.
Right. It's a paradoxical kind of legacy of the colonialism, but
yeah,
you take what power you can where it is, right? So yeah. I actually want to bring in another one of our callers, Sashon, who's called in. Sashon, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Yes, I'm calling from Oakland. I just want to say, Nina, you go. and thank you for stepping forward. I just want to hear more from indigenous women around the globe. And I'm so thankful you're doing this. And more power to you. And I was very moved by what your son said about what he wants to do with his life. It's just so moving.
Mm-hmm.
And just thank you so much for having this program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, Sashon. Let's go to our next caller, Tony in Santa Cruz. Welcome to your call. Good to have you with us. Tony, are you with us? All right, Tony has said goodbye. If you'd like to join the conversation here with Nina Wilson, Ryan Bellrose, and Daniel Sangret, all of the Idle No More Sovereignty and Sustainability Movement from Canada, the number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. If you want to hear about the issues that they are facing, talk about the connections to the broader questions of both Indigenous rights and the environmental movement around the world, the number to call, 866-798-8255. You can also always email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar here on Your Call today. I wanted to just ask for a minute about the question of sovereignty. I think because there's so little understanding of it from people who aren't part of the communities like you are. I mean, most people who are Americans or Canadians, they're like, well, They don't question sovereignty as an issue. And I guess that I wonder when you're working with activists outside of the First Nations, how you think of sovereignty and is perhaps being important to them, or in terms of what's the relationship between like sovereignty and self-determination for all peoples, not just for Indigenous people? I don't know if that's a clear question, but maybe jump in where you like on it.
I think there's a large variance even in our own community, like in what our beliefs are about sovereignty. I've always personally held the belief that it's very important for Native people to have self-determination on our ancestral lands. So what that means is we should definitely be having a say in the decisions that affect us and directly affect us. There are some people I know in Canada that are of the opinion that maybe we need to have our own state. I don't know how that would ever happen without, you know, large population transfers and stuff like that. It just doesn't seem viable because our populations are very spread out. The other thing is, too, what Americans don't really understand because they haven't been to Canada, we're very disparate people. Like, we are all distinct nations. We have very distinct traditions and cultures and languages. So, like, Nina, for instance, like, her people are very, very different from my people. Like, we have a lot of commonalities, but we speak a different language. We're from a different area. So a lot of our beliefs, while they might be similar, we're also very different. So it's very, you know, like our views on sovereignty would be more along the line of, you know, we want to have our own self-determination. I'm sure Nina's pretty much on board with that. But I mean, it's, you know, it all depends on where you are in Canada.
And well, also, and last night you were at a forum in Berkeley talking about Indigenous rights globally and connecting to here. I'm interested kind of how those conversations translate when you cross borders and, you know, these different traditions. Like you say, if you all, your nations, your communities are very different, let alone talking about, you know, struggles in the United States or in Bolivia or elsewhere.
I think for the most part, we are a rarity. We're still the Indigenous people of a land where we're still on our land. Even though we're, you know, very marginalized on that land and penalized for being just who we are, we're still here. And I think if people are going to talk sovereignty, they need to really examine that for themselves. And it's not about people from someplace better go back there. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is recognizing the First People here and understanding that we don't live off of people's taxes. We don't live off of anybody. We are our own people, and the history people don't understand. They think there's a lot of assumptions about who we are. And I think if you're going to talk sovereignty, you have to start talking about how are we going to exercise that sovereignty. Whose permission really do we need to be sovereign?
When you've talked about the actual criminalization of people for defending those sovereign rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another thing that I'm very vocal about now is the criminalization of our people. And most of those people who are being criminalized are women, because women chose to step up and do something about the encroachment and all the injustices. And so they've stepped up and they've become penalized for that. When you criminalize a woman, you're going to criminalize her children. So that creates another whole problem that we have to look at. So I'm always very supportive of our warriors, the people who step frontline. And I really encourage people to understand what opposition is. What is opposition? How do you research it? What do you do? How do you find out more about what its purpose is? Doing oppositional research is very important. Doing some analysis on propaganda. How are we messaged? You know, being who we are, having very little funds, we have a very hard time representing ourselves. So everyone represents us but us, and it's time for that to stop, and we will represent ourselves, because no one knows us like we do. And the supports that come from that is only going to develop and build whoever decides to support us and make them more credible. Because how credible can you be if you can't even talk for yourself, right? So we're trying to eliminate some of the barriers for representation, because representation is huge. it's huge in how people perceive who we are.
I want to bring in a couple more folks who've called in. Okay. Tony in Santa Cruz got back on the line. Tony, good to have you with us on your call. Welcome.
Yes, sir. This is earth-shattering news, actually. My source is Canadian organization with initials ITCCS, in case you don't get to hear all of my story. Last week, the Court of International Justice in The Hague indicted Harper, the Prime Minister of Canada, and delegitimized the entire government of Canada based on the fact they've been covering up a Holocaust on Indigenous peoples.
Hey, Tony, if you
slaughter
could...
of what?
I think that our guests actually know what you're talking about, and
well, it's going to turn over the entire government and give them the sovereignty that they need. All they got to do is look at what the investigation and the actual documented evidence.
Tony, we're a little short on time. I want to make sure that Ryan and Nina, I can see, have something to say about this. So,
okay, so like, I'm not going to get into it too heavily, but the ITCCS is a kind of a bogus organization. They do draw, you know, there's truth in what they're saying, but unfortunately they tend to do a lot of exaggerating. That actually never happened. They didn't really indict the Pope. They haven't really taken any real legal action. And so it's kind of misleading, because what happens is people hear that and then they actually think that something's being done, so they don't take action themselves. So it's actually very dangerous, those kinds of organizations, because they don't actually do anything for Native people. They just kind of invoke our name, and then they use a lot of exaggerations. And what ends up happening is it just continues a lot of the issues.
Well, I'm glad we brought it forward just so you could address it on the air, so folks see those headlines go around when they're surfing on the net and they see this information that's not really good information, that you have a chance to respond to it. I want to bring in one more caller before we wrap things up, and that is Wendy in Berkeley. Wendy, welcome to your call.
Hi, well, I just want to thank you all for standing up for all the people of the planet, and I'm really excited to try to make it up to Santa Rosa to see you guys talk tomorrow. But I really feel like the inspiration and the example that you're setting for all of humanity about protecting the environment for the future generations and the empowerment that you're taking, because so many people feel hopeless and helpless with all the corruption and destruction in the world, and they're so stuck in the rat race and in their own, you know, in their personal struggles, that it's hard to break out of that. And also recognizing that the dynamics are so similar, even though they're not identical, between First Nations struggles in Canada and Native peoples in the United States and in other countries. I think it's amazing that you all came to the Bay Area to build those bridges so that people aren't isolated, and thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you, Wendy.
Yeah, Wendy, thank you so much for the call. And if you want to respond, just talking about, we have about 3 minutes left, just kind of talk about, you know, what your kind of next actions are going to be, and where if you're trying to provide guidance, if not being a top-down leader for this movement, you know, Wilson, where you kind of are putting your energies right now?
When I go home, we're setting up camps along what we call Treaty 4 in southeastern Saskatchewan. These camps are to deal with protection and defense of land, and like my son was saying, our medicines are being contaminated. Our waters are being contaminated. This is huge for our people's way of life, our traditional living, where we need to do something. And, you know, even though the bills have not stopped, people will say, you know, we have failed. But when you go into the television stations in Canada that talk about parliamentary business, political stations, they're throwing Idle No More name around against each other, using it as a fear tactic against one party. And so to me, that is sort of a success when you can, you know, the efforts that you're doing is looked at with, I guess, that kind of an influence with parties. Having said all that, we've tried everything we could in all the conventional ways, and now we're looking at some of our own traditional ways of defense and protection, and just building a resurgence of our cultural ways with these camp setups. The camps are going to be for bringing our people back to the land to utilize it, to just get that connection back, to learn from it, and to do some of our training, the direct action training that we're trying to do, will happen. And to protect our sacred sites, we have so many sacred sites that are being decimated and being threatened right now that we are feeling very urgent about that.
I want to close, just we got an email from a listener who says, thank you for coming to the Bay Area, and there is potential for a cross-border alliance between like-minded people in the U.S. and Canada, and may already be happening. For example, the tar sand pipelines from Alberta to Texas and British Columbia will harm people, water, and land in both countries.
Absolutely.
You see evidence of that growing? Maybe a last word to either you, short and short on time.
Absolutely. We totally support the efforts of the people here who are doing the opposition against the tar sand development in Canada, and we're totally in support of the people who, like Cowboys and Indians Alliance, we're totally in support of that. The No KXL, we're totally in support of that.
Well, we will put some links to some of those groups so the folks know about
Thank
them
you.
At yourcallradio.org. And, of course, you can find out more about Idle No More there. We've been speaking with Nina Wilson, one of the founding members of Idle No More. Also with us this hour on Your Call, Ryan Balrose, who's an organizer in Calgary, and Daniel Sangret, who is a youth organizer, and also Nina's son. Thank you all for being with us. And I do want to remind folks that Nina will be in Santa Rosa tomorrow night at the Sonoma County Peace and Justice Center, 7 to 9 p.m. You can find all the details at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for your work and for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Matt Martin. How do you garden during a drought? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about strategies for gardening using less water. Some landscapers advocate taking out water-guzzling lawns and putting in drought-resistant native plants. Will you be planting your garden differently this spring? And how are you going to water it? If you're growing your own food, what crops do well on low moisture? And what about gray water? Join the conversation and bring your questions to the next Your Call with Holly Kernan and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.